Yeah. Right, should we get down to business?
Yeah. So basically, we have... I'm recording already, by the way.
Oh, right.
So we have a website, and we used to have a podcast, but we don't really have a name for the podcast because it used to be the Rear View Reviews Wrestling Podcast, and now the website is not called that. But I can't really call it the Arnold Furious Podcast because that's me, and it's weird.
You could call it the Arnold Furious Podcast featuring Akil.
Well, that would be good. Well, let's do that. Welcome to the Arnold Furious Podcast featuring Akil.
I want you to keep most of that in. Because that is gold.
I don't edit things. You should know this by now.
Fair play.
Hi, Akil.
Hi, Arnold.
So, yeah, we haven't recorded for like 6 months because the website was hacked to hell and... We didn't have a place to put it. So the last time we recorded was like the Mania weekend one.
Yeah, and after that I hated wrestling for about 4 months. So even if we could have recorded, we wouldn't have.
So yeah, we're back anyway with so we want to talk about some of the wrestling TV shows that have sprung up over the past couple of weeks, and also we want to talk quite a lot about Britwrest because we're kind of getting towards the end of the year and want to kind of talk about different promotions and how their year has gone and why. But like it's kind of kicked off on Twitter with Jordan Miles, the former ACH, taking issue with quite a lot of things, so we're going to talk about that as well. We're going to slot that in somewhere. Where do you want to start?
I think let's start with something not depressing. Let's go with NWA Power.
Yeah, really? That's not depressing?
Listen, it's legitimately the best, maybe the second best at worst wrestling show on TV right now.
It has the best theme music of any wrestling show on TV at the moment.
It's great, and it's very... Like, it's very clear what they're going for. Not so, more like studio wrestling, not really doing much in ring wise, but very heavy on the promos. I think I really like it because one of my big talking points has been that wrestling is becoming really homogenized these days. Everything sort of looks the same. Even AEW, which we're going to talk about, their TV show. There's still a lot of things they do, which is just what everyone does.
Yeah, well, them WWE, Impact, that all the TV shows look the same.
Yeah, they all look the same. They're all structured very, very similarly. It's just, you know, a different coat of paint. NWA is doing something really, really different, and I appreciate that. And I think, so how much of it have you actually watched?
Well, I messaged you about it like sort of end of last week, and you said just watch the first one. So I've watched the first one.
Yeah, so I think the first one perfectly encapsulates everything about it. I don't remember. Were you really on board with the whole Tim Storm 10 pounds of gold stuff?
Not really.
Right.
I have an issue with a lot of the NWA stuff because I lived through it the first time and I just don't need to see it again.
Right, I suppose this is where the age difference plays in a little bit because obviously I didn't live through the NWA, so to me it's not nostalgic in the same way, but at the same time I don't have all of the baggage that comes with a show of that style and of the NWA. Because as long as I've been alive, the NWA has been a joke.
Yeah. Well, so... I actually kind of took a look at their TV and what they'd done like since WCW. Because like they got kicked out by Turner sort of 1990. And like after that, they really haven't had anything good. They were technically, ECW was an NWA affiliate. So that was like the first break they got after that. But
Yep.
they also ditched the NWA because they sucked and they weren't cool. And then after that, it'd be like Ohio Valley before WWE kind of decided to use that as a breeding ground for their wrestlers. Then there was Wildside TV. After that, it was Anarchy, Wrestling Showcase, and the last attempt at anything was Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, which was about 7 8 years ago. But
Yeah,
these are all
so
very nothing shows.
yeah, I mean, I like Championship Wrestling from Hollywood from that era. I've seen a bit of Wildside from that era. It's all good stuff, but it never felt important. I think this feels more important.
Yeah, this has a good deal more star power attached to it. It feels, like you say, it feels more important.
I absolutely loved at the end of the first episode, which you've seen, the Tim Storm promo. I think what happened
I
with
was not prepared for Tim Storm to come out there and start quoting Eminem.
it was great.
That completely threw me. I was like, what?
It was phenomenal, phenomenal stuff. I think Tim Storm, when this whole Dave Lagana NWA thing started, it was sort of built on the back of Tim Storm and that amazing 10 Pounds of Gold series, which you're saying you didn't really enjoy, but I thought was absolutely phenomenal. It then sort of completely fell apart when it went to Nick Aldis, wasn't the same, and Tim Storm sort of disappeared for a bit. And I think the one thing they've done right is they've gone, this is a guy that helped us in a very dark time, and they've recaptured lightning in a bottle with Tim Storm, I think. I don't know what you feel about that.
I don't really care about Tim Storm, like
Okay.
not even remotely. Nick Aldis is one of the absolute anti-draw for me. Like if I see Nick Aldis on the show, I probably won't watch it because he sucks.
You know, I feel very much the same way, but something about his presentation on NWA works for me. I don't know what it is, but he fits that whole style better than he does any other promotion where he actually has to
Oh, I
work.
completely agree with that. Like what like his style of promo is extremely dated, which is ideal for this for what they're going for here. His style of wrestling is also extremely dated. Like he's wrestling a style that went out of fashion 30 years ago, and he's not even particularly good at it, but that's beside the point. So this is an ideal setting for Nick Aldis.
He's the perfect Ric Flair cosplay champion for an NWA cosplay show. I think that's the nicest way of putting it.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they had someone better. If they had
Yeah.
somebody who had his strengths but also was good at wrestling, that would be ideal, I think.
Yeah, but if we're completely honest, anyone that's better than him is signed somewhere else.
Yeah, there's probably someone. I mean, I'd rather it was Eddie Kingston. At least Eddie Kingston's promos are energized.
I get the feeling you're not as into NWA as I am.
Oh no, I'd probably never watch this again.
I see. Whereas it's the only show I look forward to these days. So we're on very different pages.
Yeah. Well, not everyone has the same tastes in professional wrestling. That's what's so great about it. You have an amazing array of stuff that's out there that you can watch. So if you don't like one show, there's another show on right afterwards. It's like Mania Weekend with its like 50 shows. Yeah, if you don't care for blood sport, then there's DDT. It's like, there's all manner of different shit out there, and there's a show for you. Whereas the only positive thing I could really find to say about the NWA Power is that it wasn't very long.
That's very cruel. It's very cruel. We're never going to get co-opted like this on.
No, I would not want to be co-opted by the NWA.
In that case, let's talk about AEW Dynamite. Maybe you're a bit more positive on that. Now, I'm right in thinking you've seen the last episode, right?
Yeah, I watched the one with it was the crazy tag that opened it with Private
Young Bucks,
Party
Private
and
Party.
yeah.
Sorry, Private Party Lucha Bros?
Yes.
That's the one. And the Cody Jericho angle.
Yeah.
Right, so what do you think of this show compared to NWA? Or just in general, what do you think of this show?
AEW is a product that appeals to a completely different market. So NWA Power is kind of aiming at people who have become disenchanted with the modern form of professional wrestling and want something more traditional. Whereas AEW are trying to be WWE but do it better. And Dynamite feels like a better written WWE show.
Right.
Just in general, that the like they actually care about tag team wrestling. They're not just putting on tag team wrestling because it's a thing and it's the flavor of the month for them. It's something that they've got building blocks here for a tag team division that can last for years without adding a massive talent to it. They have like what, six core teams in there, and I like five of them. So
Yeah, you've got all of the big present teams like the Young Bucks, the Lucha Bros, I suppose even like the Best Friends. You've got an interesting group of teams coming up beneath them, like Private Party, Jurassic Express. I don't know if you've seen much of them yet, because I don't think they were on the last show.
I've seen plenty of Luchasaurus. Who's he tagged with?
So his normal tag team partner is Jungle Boy. Jungle Boy is in, no, sorry. He's in a unit with Jungle Boy and Marco Stunt, and Luchasaurus got injured. So Jungle Boy and Marco Stunt teamed on the show before the one you watched.
Right. Was that the one where they were like Cornette was complaining because Marco Stunt was small?
Yes, exactly. Not realizing that that's literally his gimmick.
Yeah.
And also, the match was worked in a way that everyone was aware that Marco Stunt is a child, and Pentagon was bullying him.
Sounds like fun. That sounds like a fun time.
It was a really good match because the whole thing was Marco Stunt is clearly out of his depth, and these two asshole luchadors are just going to beat the shit out of him. And he gets some offense in, but it's not strikes and things, it's all momentum-based stuff, which you can reasonably say a small guy could do to someone bigger than him. I
Yeah,
think
I
it
do
was.
find a lot of indie matches do struggle with the whole height difference thing, and there are big guys who are taking moves off smaller guys, and it just doesn't look right.
Yeah, because everyone's caught up with just having the best match possible and just doing a load of stuff without thinking about. I feel like an old man saying this, but a lot of people are ignoring basic psychology with on the indies these days, and
Yeah, it's
it
not
does
even
annoy
hard
me.
stuff to do properly. They're just not doing it.
No, because we've been trained with the PWG style of just go, go. And that's what makes a good match.
There is a fair bit of PWG influence here, which is like that's where the Bucks kind of got their audience from, and then
Yeah,
picked
I
up a bit
think
more with New Japan, but like that's the core audience that really support the Young Bucks. They're the PWG fans.
Yeah, and I think even if you look at the roster, Chuck Taylor, Trent Barretta, these are all like PWG guys, even Dark Order, Super Smash Bros, they're old PWG guys.
Oh,
Even
there's
down to
definitely an influence there.
Brandon Cutler, he's a PWG dude from way back. What do you think? So my big issue with the shows overall has been that it seems very much match, match, match. There's not really the promos or the video packages
They
breaking
did
things up.
quite a bit of that because I watched the episode of AEW's Dark like the week before. So I watched that and there was this great sit down promo with where Cody Rhodes kind of interviews what's the name of the dude? Is it QT Marshall?
QT Marshall.
Yeah, so they had him sit down and be interviewed and that was an excellent little segment. It fitted in perfectly with what they were trying to do because they were introducing the guy, explaining what you've been doing behind the scenes and what like why should we care about him? There you go. Here's some reasons, and that was really, really good. I feel like they did a lot less of that on Dynamite, and I think that's deliberate because they have less room to play with stuff. Because if you get it wrong, it's going to cost you viewers. Whereas Dark is just, it's on YouTube. People can skip over stuff if they don't want to watch it. But it's TV needs to be strong, I think, all the way through. So I can see why they've done it that way.
Yeah, but how long can you keep doing just matches without actually telling you why you should be interested in these characters?
Yeah, I guess they're looking to build a fan base first and then work from what they've kind of set out. So they are putting guys out there and doing little things with them to build them as characters in the ring. Like Joey Janela this week, for example. They had him in there to begin with on their big pay-per-view events as like this hardcore crazy guy who'll do anything. And they've been deliberately billing him over the past week or so as somebody who can also wrestle. So they've kind of added a little bit more depth to him in that he wants to go out there and prove that he can work, and having him go out there and do that with Kenny Omega was kind of a demonstration of it, saying like here's a top guy in the ring, and here's a guy who's saying he is also a top guy, and have them go for like 15, and he lost, but like he got the point across. The trouble with it is they've got commentary who have been told to get this across, and Jim Ross is like on message like all the way through it. But it's too on the nose. So like he's telling me what to think.
Yeah, I think that's. I mean, we're going to talk about Jim Ross's commentary quite in depth in a bit because, fuck, he's awful. But I think that's where if you had even like a 5 second insert during Joey Janela's entrance, where he just goes, everyone thinks I'm this big deathmatch guy. I'm going to go out there to prove I can wrestle, and I'm going to do it by beating the top guy or the one of the top guys in the company. If you do something like that, you don't need commentary smashing over your head the idea.
Do you think Jim is used to like when he worked for WWE, he would have had somebody in his ear barking at him to say the same thing over and over again just to kind of drill the point home. So like he's just carrying on doing what he knows. It really needs somebody in creative to say to him, you don't need to do that to that extent. But he feels that's how you get a message across is by repetition. So like if that's how he feels he should be doing it, then that's how he's gonna do it.
I think the issue is no one in charge is telling Jim Ross, look, this is what you do, and you just do it our way. Because everyone's like, oh, this is an old guy, we have to respect him, all of this. So he's like, look, I can just do whatever I want. The way I know how to do this is repeat the same point over and over
Yeah.
again, because that's what I've been doing for 20 years.
To be
And
fair,
no.
he is less bad now than he was when they started, because when he started, he literally just didn't know what was happening. Yeah, he didn't have a clue who any of the wrestlers were. He didn't know what any of their moves were. He just didn't know what was happening. So he'd literally just shut up and let Excalibur do everything, which was kind of okay most of the time. But now he's kind of getting to understand the wrestlers and what they're about. He feels he can interject more, which is why he's talking like he is, and it's just a bit too much.
Yeah, I think I think that's true. I think he's getting more comfortable and starting to realize he can sort of say whatever he wants. I don't know if you noticed in that tag match at the beginning, he's just burying the whole thing, talking about why aren't these people going for pins and this tag isn't legal and all of this.
To be
And
honest with you, a lot of commentary just goes over my head because I've been so used to hearing commentary that I just don't care what they're saying because they're not saying anything of relevance, so I just ignore it. So it's mainly the WWE Michael Cole syndrome, but also that extends to how New Japan used to have commentary that it just was there. It was white noise, like nothing important was being said. And that has changed because they got Chris Charlton in, and that's where your expert analysis comes from. And I'm actually hearing things that are of use to me in, taking the matches on board. And with AEW, that guy is Excalibur. So I'm kind of listening out for his voice. So I don't actually hear what Jim Ross is saying half the time, which is just me. It's the way I listen to stuff, I kind of zone out a little bit when certain people are talking.
right, you're really lucky then, because in that opening tag match, Jim Ross was exceptionally annoying.
Yeah, I didn't even notice. I didn't even hear him.
Yeah, there was a couple times he complained about why someone was going for a dive instead of a pin. And like, this is all a reasonable thing to say, but not if you're a commentator. The point of the commentator is to put over the match and hide all of these issues, not explicitly point them out.
Yeah, unless it's the story. Like if
Which
the
it wasn't,
story of the
which it
match is that
wasn't.
one guy's doing a flip and that cost the team the match because he was flipping around instead of getting a pin, then that's fine. But like picking it apart without any instruction is not helpful.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't the story of the match, because I think it was Phoenix that went for the pin, that went for the flip, sorry. And Lucha Bros won.
The thing is, I know that which dive that was. Like he did the dive to take the guy out,
Yeah.
to make sure that the guy on the floor couldn't break up the pin because he was like lying on the floor being hit by a dive. So that made sense to me.
Yeah. Jim Ross is awful. It's just, he's still really bad during the women's matches as well. Because I think, again, he's just programmed of the Attitude Era style of calling women's wrestling and trying to become in the 21st century is a bit of a struggle for him. It's just really, I don't like it. I can't. The quicker they realize Jim Ross isn't worth the couple extra eyes you might get from lapsed fans, the
I feel
better.
like you're going to get as much from Tony Schiavone as you would from Jim Ross, because people will still remember Tony from that same era. Like Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone were like big names in wrestling announcing around the same time. So you're going to get those same people with Tony Schiavone that you'd get with Jim Ross, I think. Even though how many people are actually going to watch AEW because they hear Jim Ross's voice? I think.
I think Jim Ross has a bit more cachet, just because he has a lot of really iconic calls that are still now like used in memes and things. So it's a recognizable voice. Whereas Shivani, to be honest with you, I can't think of a famous Shivani line off the top of my head. Maybe the Mankind that'll put butts in seats, but like
Oh, I
that's
always
not.
use the one, the Hogan one where you can go to hell. Straight to hell.
Yes,
That
yes.
was a great call.
Yeah. How did you like the angle, the Cody Jericho angle?
That I think they did pretty well with it. The whole wrestlers have bought tickets to a show thing is a bit. I'm not particularly keen on that, but once they got into like verbal sparring and Cody saying like there's no invisible wall around the ring, I'm just going to come up there and punch you. So I just remember Chris Jericho said, "Who wears a scarf?" So, yeah. And then like hit with the way he punched through the glass, and that whole the way it escalated was pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, I think the angle itself to me might go down as like a classic angle, classic TV wrestling angle. I thought it was hot. The way they revealed everyone on Cody's side slowly worked really, really well. Because you had the small pop with Dustin, you had MJF getting a surprisingly big pop, considering he's technically a heel, and then DDP got this ridiculous pop. The brawling on the during the
I
concession.
didn't even realize DDP was going to come out. Like I watched it after it had aired, so I kind of knew what the match rundown was in terms of like what matches were happening. But I had no idea DDP was coming out. So that kind
Yeah,
of popped me as well.
it was really good. It was really, really good. The concession stand brawl was really, really fun. Cody just looked like an absolute badass, which is something that I never thought I'd say. But I think there's a point you made where the whole they bought a ticket thing, I think there was a step missing there, because surely, even though the whole point is they don't have a match, so they don't have to be there, Jericho is still your world champion, and so of course he would be at the show.
I assumed I'd just missed something.
No. There was literally nothing.
Okay. I
This is
assumed there was
again.
something about they because they'd attacked them like the week before, they were banned from TV that week or something.
I've watched every second of AEW so far. There was no anything.
Okay.
This is again where I think they are making a few small issues here and there.
Well, they had a little bit of a technical snafu right before this segment. They had Tony Schiavone in the ring with Cody, and you could hear, "Okay, Tony, we're back," and then like he started doing the interview.
Yeah, there's a couple weird things here and there. You can tell they're a new company and they're new to this.
I think they're
What
doing surprisingly well considering, because there's a
Yeah,
lot of stuff that can go wrong that isn't going wrong, and they've got a lot of professional people in there, and that's helped a great deal. But it's live TV, it's difficult, and it took WWE a long time to actually get to the stage where they were doing live TV like on a week to week basis, because they weren't confident that they could do it well. And if they got pushed into doing it more frequently because of WCW.
I think AEW are getting a lot of the big picture stuff right. It's just a couple things here and there that are issues. But it does seem like they're a company that at least is willing to change. For example, during those first buy-ins, the librarian stuff they tried, it didn't really get over, so they dropped. Dark Order were clearly a team that was supposed to be pushed really, really heavily. They didn't get over. They've slowly been pushed away.
Yeah.
They're clearly receptive to what people are saying.
I know, I think they need to be as well. The problem that they're going to have is how far in advance are they booking? How much are they locked into stuff? I think the most obvious glaring issue they've had with booking was Hangman Page is supposed to be one of their big guys, and they had a problem with Pac, where Pac wouldn't lose to him. Because he had a strong belief in Dragon Gate and their champion shouldn't lose. So that led to a massive booking problem, and they never found a way around it. So Paige just kind of didn't get that big boost at the start that he needed. And the way that they tried to correct it, didn't he end up in a battle royal or something? It was just generally they had a problem with rewriting stuff because
Yeah.
there's a lot of moving parts and there's a lot of people involved in the creative process compared to with your WWE, you have like one guy at the top Whereas I think they're doing a little bit of committee booking here, so it's making it harder to change things when something goes wrong. And I think it'll be a real test for them if they have something like that and they lose somebody out of a major angle. It'll be interesting to see how they compensate for it, because they don't seem capable of rebooking a whole show. They only want to fix what's broken. They won't break something to try and make the whole thing better. Although, to be honest with you, the way that Vince does it is stupid and awful most of the time anyway, so maybe they're just doing the right thing.
I think the handling of Hangman Page is a really interesting case study of how AEW is going to react to things. Because, like I said, there have been a couple little things that went wrong and they fixed. But you're right, Hangman Page was clearly supposed to be like the guy they build up and their star. And a couple of things went awry, and he's now, to be honest with you, he's like a mid-card act at best.
Yeah, but he was supposed to be like one of the big guys. That was the whole deal with him, and
At the
because he
first
couldn't
press
get
conference.
that big win at the start, they just couldn't find a way to get around it, and it's still an issue for him.
Yeah, at the first press conference when they announced the promotion. He was the guy going, I want to be heavyweight champion. He was clearly supposed to be sort of in the role Cody is in now. It's just things went wrong. They didn't know how to correct it properly. I think the point you brought up about committee booking, it'll be interesting to see a couple months down the line how things change. Because it's very clear the stuff Cody is involved with is the best stuff. And so, in
Well,
theory, he's
Cody
the.
is your guy for storylines. He understands wrestling storylines, whereas I feel that for all their strengths in the ring, Bucks and Kenny are not so good at storyline telling in the traditional sense, and they obviously want to change the way that's done, and they're trying, but I feel like your strongest storylines are going to come from Cody.
Yeah, I think Cody and the Bucks have two completely polarizing ideas or philosophies on wrestling. So it's going to be interesting to see in a couple months down the line what ends up winning. I would hope it's the Cody side, just because to me that is the more. Like, we've talked more about that Cody Jericho angle than we did the tag match at the beginning. Tag match was a great match,
Yeah.
but the angle was a lot more. There was a lot more to chew on.
Yeah, and that's always going to be the way. People will always remember memorable storylines over good matches that don't have that emotional attachment. I think you can get away with having a bad match if you kind of hook the crowd emotionally. But if you get that perfect storm, the combination of good wrestling and the emotions, then that's where you're going to get your absolute peak wrestling. And Cody is always going to bring that side that you need to prop up the wrestling. Because the wrestling's always going to be good. From the talent they've got on this roster is very impressive. And there's never going to be an issue with me sitting down to watch an AEW show and coming away from it thinking that the wrestling was mediocre, because these guys who are the forefront of their in-ring are the same people who have the investment in the company. They're the ones that are involved at the core of how it runs. So they're going to go out there and do the best they can in the ring, and the guys that they're booking are going to want that, because this is a new environment. This is an opportunity for them to rise to the top of that new environment and become bankable stars for years to come if they get it right in the ring. Look at Private Party. Look at how much they've benefited from just turning up and being really good at the right time in the right place.
You're never going to have an issue with having bad matches. There's been, what, four episodes of Dynamite so far, I think, and every show has had at least one four plus star match. So you're always going to sit down and have something really exciting to watch in ring wise. And Private Party are clearly a team they want to be. They feel like they feel like what the Young Bucks were like 3 or 4 years ago, where they're just on the cusp of being really, really big stars.
I feel like they really made them with the tournament by having them progress as deep as they did and also look phenomenally good in losing at the semi-final stage. I feel that's to put them in that kind of prime spot. And as I said earlier, they've made tag team wrestling important. It's given them a platform to build from going forwards. And tournament booking is not easy. And I think they've done a pretty good job of this first tournament challenge. And I'd like to see them do something, maybe not at the level of G1, but something where they do a tournament once a year. Because I think you get, they want that sports, style of wrestling, and tournaments is how you get that.
I could see them doing something kind of G1-esque at some point down the line, because obviously, like you said, you want the sports like feel. You've also there's a very heavy New Japan influence, obviously, in this company. So then you, I would be surprised if they don't try some kind of big summer tournament. It'll be interesting to see a couple months down the line. Right now, I'm very, very happy where this show is. It's just
Yeah.
come January, February time. Let's see if they're keeping this momentum going.
Yeah, I mean, we're at a time of the year where audiences are traditionally not great because a lot of, like WWE, for example, between like Survivor Series and Royal Rumble, there's this yearly drop of, well, it's Christmas, so no one's watching anyway. And it seems to happen every year. The December pay-per-view is traditionally one of the worst that they put out. So AEW, having started out where they did, sort of start of October, wasn't it, the first episode? They're going to have a chance, I think, in the coming months to run creatively unopposed because a lot of other companies don't do anything. So they could become the most interesting thing on television for a couple of months before WWE get their shit together in January.
Yeah, and also I think this is a time of year where New Japan isn't really
Yeah,
as interesting as they are either.
this is pretty much the worst time of the year for New Japan. Like
Yeah.
they have, I think, a show in November, and then they just go to sleep for a month.
It's base I would say between the G1 and Wrestle Kingdom, you have King of Res Pro Wrestling, you've got Power Struggle, but it's very much there. We're gearing up for Wrestle Kingdom. Everyone's
Yeah.
going to take a bit of a break, period. So even those kind of old Bullet Club fans, you have a chance to gain their attention.
Yeah, if you hit some real home run shows over the next 2 months, you could put like AEW in a position where people are more invested in it coming into the new year than they are in anything else. And New Japan will always get their pickup from Wrestle Kingdom. And WWE will always get their pickup from Mania season. But if you're building consistently and you're doing a good job, then they should be in a good place come the start of the year. I think the we were talking earlier about lack of promos and stuff. If they do more of that, like the Cody and QT sit down thing. If they do more things along those lines, and they have like Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone there, who are very experienced with doing interviews, there is a lot of potential there to spend months building up a good chunk of the roster and making them into interesting, rounded individuals that are worth paying attention to. Whereas if you're in watching WWE, like every guy on a WWE show is just one thing. They only have one attribute about their personality or whatever, and that's it. And they're not allowed anything else because that is the brand. Well, and once you are branded, you are that thing forever. And AEW has the chance to do that better, create personalities rather than types, and you'll get more investment in the show and in the characters that they're putting across if they do it that way.
Very well said.
Thank you.
I agree with everything you've said.
There's a lot of other positives, I think, about the AEW product. They've got two really good referees, Aubrey Edwards and especially Bryce Remsburg. I think Bryce is the best referee working today.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of Bryce for a while. After that Invisible Man, Invisible Stan thing.
That was unreal.
Yeah, after that, he's easily the best referee in the world.
Yeah, I mean he's been up there for quite some time, but I just feel like if you're a really good referee, like when he doesn't need to be seen, you don't know he's there. Whereas there are other referees who historically have been popular, who the very reason why they're popular is because they got in the way. And almost they were detrimental to the product because they weren't a referee. Whereas Bryce, if you need
Oh,
him to
have
do
that.
something, he can do it. It doesn't matter what it is. But when you just need him to be the referee and be in the right place and do what he's supposed to do, he's there and he's perfect.
Yeah, Bryce is great. Aubrey is great.
Yeah.
I think Rick
Excalibur, I
Knox is
think
great as great.
for commentary, we were talking about commentary earlier. Excalibur has been worth this shot for a very, very long time. But he's been stuck away in California and doing like small indie stuff, and this has been his big break, and he, for me, has been outstanding. I think he's been truly excellent in that role.
Yeah, he's a guy that you could have argued that for a while he was the best commentator in the world. I don't know if he still is because Kevin Kelly's very good. There's a lot of good commentators now,
I
but
feel like
he's.
Excalibur, you're never going to trip him up. He just, even when he gets something wrong, he just has the ability to just kind of flow with it. And he has a ton of information, but he's got a well-rounded knowledge of wrestling. So he's firing information at you, but he's also funny and his timing is perfect. And he talks quickly, so he's able to get a lot of information out there in a very short space of time, and he can emote as well, so he's not just this guy who's just throwing commentary out there. He has ups and downs, and he gets into the match as well, and I feel like he's ideal for this product because he's so eloquent, but also because he's so quick in his delivery. It kind of goes along with what the product is, which is why Jim Ross is so perfect not to be a commentator on the show, because he's the antithesis of what they're aiming for, whereas Excalibur is, he's a perfect fit.
Yeah, I think everyone involved is very, very good. It's just can the pieces stay together for a reasonable amount of time?
Yeah, I think
It's easy,
a lot of it will depend on whether they can keep the crowd hot, because the crowds that they've had so far have all been really good, and they are running places where they know they're going to get good reactions. I think Pittsburgh was a good choice because Pittsburgh is kind of starved of indies, So they don't have like hot action on a regular basis. So they're getting to see something they wouldn't normally see. And that crowd started with excitement, given this this hot new product, they like were fully into it.
Yeah, I think the Pittsburgh crowd was phenomenal. I was really surprised because Pittsburgh isn't really known to be, it's not one of those cities you think of as being a really hot crowd.
That's the thing. It's not a hot crowd because whenever WWE basically stopped running there for big shows because they felt they weren't getting the crowd reaction, so they haven't had a big show in ever. And when they
Yeah.
do run there, they usually put on a shit show because they think, oh, it's only Pittsburgh.
Yeah, the self-fulfilling prophecy. I think you're gonna have a run of really, really hot shows to start off with, just because it's a new promotion, everyone's really excited. But it's gonna be interesting when they come back to Pittsburgh, or when they're doing a second or third loop. At that point, are the crowds still hot,
Yeah.
or are they? That's again, a lot of things with AEW is just, things are going well now. Let's see how they're going 6 months, a
Yeah,
year down the line.
it's definitely a very exciting product to watch at the moment, but if it's going to be an exciting product in 6 months, they need to iron out all the mistakes and they need to flesh out the guys, because it's the guys they've signed are going to be the need to be the guys that carry the product going forwards. They can't rely on popping the crowd with somebody who's a surprise. Like, they can't keep doing
You
your
can't keep
John
bringing
Moxley's
DDP
and
out.
you can't do that like week to week. So at the moment they're still living off the idea that it's fresh and it's new and anything can happen. But like, once you get into a run of shows, it needs to be carried by the in-ring, but they need to build up the characters to make the in-ring meaningful. So that's what they need to do.
Yes. I have nothing else to add. I think we've talked quite exhaustively
Yes.
about AEW.
But yeah, I really enjoyed the show.
Let's finish with this. Will you watch next week?
If I remember that it's on, yeah.
Or more importantly, will you watch the pay-per-view on the 8th or the 9th?
No, but only because well, I'll be in London for She-One, the Eve weekender. So if somebody is having it on that I see there, then yeah, I would. But it's only because
Okay.
I'm like completely out of the area. If not, I will watch it when I come back. So it'd be like the Monday.
If you were, okay, I know we're getting very hypothetical now, but if you weren't in London, if you were home, would you be like, look, I'm going to watch this pay-per-view? Or is it more of a case of, oh, I've got some spare time,
I would
I
watch it,
guess I'll
yeah.
watch
I would
this?
definitely watch it. But I rarely ever watch anything live, and I probably wouldn't watch it live. There's more chance of me watching it live in London because I will bump into someone who's got it on than there is me watching it live at home. But then I don't watch anything live at home. It's Mania
Fair.
weekend is the only time I watch anything live other than like New Japan, because it's on during the day.
Fair.
So that's not a knock on them. I don't
It's
like
more of a you
watching
thing.
shows at
It's not
2 o'clock
a.
in the morning. It's not a knock on them. It's I'm old.
Yeah. It's a knock on yourself.
It's a knock on me. I'm only knocking myself. You want to talk about Jordan Miles?
Yeah,
So, can I just kind of like set you up for it?
go on.
I have great difficulty with not seeing representation because I am white. So I always see people that look like me on television, and it doesn't occur to me that somebody else is missing out, and it never has done. That's just where I come from like as a white male person is I just see people like my whole life that are like me on television and there's no issue from where I'm at. And similarly, when like say somebody pushes a non-white performer as their top guy, it doesn't bother me. So it's not like I have any frame of reference for what he's arguing, which is why it's ideal to have you on for this.
I assume most people listening to this know, but just in case you don't, I am obviously a brown man. My parents were Pakistani immigrants. I am very much a person of color. And I think I, so a bit of background, we planned out everything we were going to talk about a couple, like a week ago even. And I messaged Arne yesterday saying, look, I feel like I have to talk about this. This is something very, very important to me. And it's not just the Jordan Miles thing. There is a systematic race issue in professional wrestling. It's very, very easy to ignore because most fans are like you. They're all white, so they don't see a problem.
And I
I
don't think
think.
that's an ignoring that there is a problem. It's just they're not
No,
even
no,
aware
no.
that there is
It's
one.
exactly. It's like I don't realize if I go into, I don't know, if I go into a bathroom, I don't realize there's a plumbing problem because I'm not a plumber. You don't wa you watch a show and don't realize there's a race problem. That's not anything about you. That's just how it is. I felt really compelled to talk about this because I know what's going to happen. There's going to be a lot of white people talking about this, talking about it as if it's a very, very important thing. And then the news cycle is going to keep going and it's just going to be thrown away. I'm very aware that, particularly in our bubble, there aren't very many people of color that are going to be talking about this. So it's very, very important to me. Like I said, there's a massive, massive race problem in professional wrestling. Look at any company, even AEW, which are a fairly progressive company, all things considered, don't have very many people of color on their roster, especially not at the top end. In this country, I can probably count on one hand the amount of big, majorly pushed people of color. You've got Rampage Brown, that's basically it, really. I think this is a huge, huge problem. You have people clearly trying to make a difference. You had that Everything Patterned show, Wrestling Resurgence did, but stuff like that's not enough. We shouldn't have to be. And again, this isn't about Jordan Miles because I don't. Frankly, it's a WWE thing. It's not a thing I normally care about. I'm a bit all over the place with this. We shouldn't have to be forcing companies to be progressive. It should just be the norm. I shouldn't be surprised when I see someone on TV that looks like me, that has a similar background to me. Mustafa Ali shouldn't be a big surprise that there's a Pakistani guy being pushed really hard. That's a face that is very open about his faith and the fact that he's a Muslim. It's disgusting, to be honest. It is disgusting to me that there's kids growing up that watch wrestling, that love wrestling, that don't get to see people like them on their wrestling. And it's very, very difficult when there's an industry that you love that doesn't seem to love you back, I think that's my biggest thing.
Yeah, it's like I say, it's very tough for me to have any kind of an input into this conversation because I don't feel like any way qualified to talk about it. But
Yeah, I just needed to get on my soapbox for a bit, and I'm sure that was all rambly and didn't make sense, but you
it
know,
makes sense. I think there's two issues here. There's one is that there are certain promoters who will look at talent that's available and will just pick whoever they think is best. And that doesn't even like race doesn't come into it. It's a case of they just pick whoever's best. And that isn't always a person of color. Sometimes it's a white guy and the white guy gets pushed. And then there's the flip side of it. Well, 'cause I don't think that's a problem. I don't think that's a problem at all. If you look at who is out there and you just pick the best people, then that's fine. But there is also, at the same time, a different approach to wrestling, which has been that only certain people will get pushed. And if you look at historically WWE in particular, I think there is very much racism in the way that they book their promotion. And this is systematic and it's been going on for a very, very long time. And the problem is, you normally get like a generational change. You're not going to get that in WWE because Vince McMahon is the same generation that he was in the 70s, which, whereas elsewhere you get like a little bit of progression, it's steady. You're just not seeing it there. The other concern is that Triple H isn't much better. I think he has an old school mentality towards the way wrestling is run, which is why he had such a strong influence in the WrestleMania program that he had with Booker T, which is one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen from a manipulating racial tensions point of view. For that to happen, like, what was it, 15 years ago? That was
It's
just
nothing.
completely unacceptable.
Yeah.
And for the guys that who are driving basically the driving force of the entire industry in North America, to have the mentality that they do is part of the reason why you're not getting the representation, where it's just not happening.
Things trickle down from the top until the industry leaders make a change. This kind of stuff is going to keep happening. There's a point you brought up, I just want to counter. You said promoters look at who is best and just book them. I think while that is very, very true, we have to be aware of the fact that generally minorities aren't given the opportunities to become the best. And so the cycle just continues. You have some people now, like Michael Oku. He's the hottest guy in wrestling right now, and he's getting pushed everywhere. So there are opportunities for these people, for some of these people, but you still have some old school promoters with the belief of we only need one black person on this card. You know, we treat it as a gimmick. In the same way that for a while we only needed one woman's match on a card. That's still the case in most places,
But
you
there
know.
is an aspect where you are ticking boxes, and I think this has been a WWE thing for a long time, where you
Yeah.
had like one English guy, one Irish guy, one black guy, one Samoan, and they were ticking boxes.
Yeah, like I said, it starts from the top and until the top makes a change, nothing's going to be the same.
Yeah.
Right, I think on a happier note, I think you wanted to talk a bit about Britress in general.
Yeah, well, I was basically going to do like a state of Britress thing, and then I ended up sort of making detailed notes on how various promotions' years had gone, because I felt like I couldn't just say, oh, Progress have had a bad year, or Progress have had an okay year, without actually kind of going into what that involved. So I've basically taken a look at the years from the 2019s of Progress, RevPro, and to a lesser extent, like ICW and Fight Club Pro and OTT and Breed. So if you have any takes, feel free to jump in. We're going to start with Progress. People were genuinely worried, or maybe worried is not the right word, but people genuinely thought Progress might end at the end of 2019 because Unboxing happened to be show 100. And there was a feeling that like 100 would be it, and then it would be done, and everyone would just go and work for NXT UK. But instead of that, it's Jim Smallman has left, or he's leaving at Unboxing.
Yes, and it's Matt Richards is replacing him creatively. It seems like he already has. If you look at his name was at the bottom of this season ticket email, even if you look at the sort of talent that's being booked, it's a lot of Northwest guys. Obviously, Matt is from the Northwest and is a guy that's pushing some of these people. So he clearly has some influence already, if not, is already involved.
Don't know if I'm allowed to say anything about that, so I'm just not going to.
Yeah, this is why I've taken the reins on that bit. But it does feel like now I haven't seen much progress from this year, I'll be completely honest. But
I
from,
mostly cherry picked.
yeah, there is a definite buzz that's lost. The bloom is off the rose, so to speak. Something has been, it, I don't know, it's just not what it was in 2015, 2016.
They've had a lot of problems this year. The focus creatively of being away from the promotion, and Jim Smallman especially being involved with NXT UK, has meant like a reduction in quantity and quality of storytelling. They've been using NXT UK talent as a crutch to draw, which has resulted in a combination of disappointing crowds when the numbers of NXT UK guys were down, but also disappointing creative when they were being used, because everyone knew they couldn't lose to guys who weren't contracted or were not able to. Certain people couldn't beat certain people, and that became abundantly clear that David Starr was not going to beat a WWE contracted wrestler, which is a little difficult when you book your big show of the year and have the main event as David Starr versus Volta, because you know David Starr can't win that match. More recently, you've had Ilya Dragunov putting over Cara Noir, and Tony Storm lost to Danny Luna in Manchester, which it kind of felt like. Not so much that they were phasing out this NXT UK connection, but that they were allowing it to be more fruitful for them going forwards, which I hope is true. I would hope
Yeah.
that's what they were going to be used for going forwards, because I feel like you can't just use WWE contracted talent and just book them like nothing is wrong.
It feels like we're in that pic. So what happens, what seems to happen with WWE is they'll get very, very tight on these UK contracts. And then they start to ease off a bit. And it feels like we're in the easy off period right now. You've got Tyler Bate working Shout and Grab shows. You've got Trent Seven working Fight Club Pro. These people are still around a little bit. Like you said, Tony Storm losing matches, Ilya Dragunov losing matches, Eddie Dennis is your Progress champion. It's
There's an issue with see Progress. I've got booking issues outside of the NXT connection. They've actually had highs and lows this year. It's not all been like doom and gloom. So the first like couple of months of the year, there was a heavy focus on the tag division because they had Swords of Essex, CCK, and Aussie Open, and the tag matches they did in the first 3 months of the year were great, but it was kind of designed to distract rather, should I say, from Volta being pretty much absent. And when they were able to use Volta, I think they used him fairly effectively, but then it got to the point where they actually had to get the title off him, and got to a point where they just didn't know how to. And it ended up in a screw job, and you went from a champion who was barely on the shows, or he had appeared like 4 times, I think, between January and September, to a guy who can't even wrestle. And they're both WWE contracted.
I think what they really need is come after Chapter 100, just even if they have the availability of the NXT UK guys, just almost sever ties with all of them. Maybe keep one or two around. Someone like Ilya, who's not really being used on NXT UK.
I would probably use them more sparingly, and I certainly wouldn't build programs around them or put titles on any of them.
No, I think what happened at the start of the year with the tag division, it almost felt like here are all the non-NXT UK guys that we can't have being the NXT UK guys, so let's just cordon them off on their own little. It felt like a different show compared to the rest, almost.
But that was all their main events as well. So it was they did like 3 months of main events where it was all on the tags. Culminating in the TLC match in March where they went like 45 minutes. It's interesting to me that in April they didn't run a show at all because they didn't go to Mania. So there the focus is totally on NXT UK to the point where they didn't even run.
Well, again, that's because they just didn't have the talent. Because all of the, at that point, almost all of their roster was NXT UK. And obviously, they're needed for matches in front of three people access. So you just can't run a show.
But I feel like this year has come in like peaks and troughs. So you had that where April they ran 2 shows in March in outside of Camden, where there was one in Bournemouth and one in Birmingham, but it was Carrot Weekend and it was literally nobody cared. Like I didn't see anything about those shows. I think somebody came off a balcony and they're not allowed back to Bournemouth. But then you come to May and Strong Style Weekend, there was the whole David Starr promo. His whole weekend, you had the Trenton Volta unification match. You had Koji Big Battle running that weekend. You had Jordan Devlin with his run. You had Jimmy Havoc's bloody farewell match with Paul Robinson. You had Robbo's arrival as a real genuine star in the promotion, and they ran the 80s show, and he was the highlight of that as Johnny Swayze. So you had a month where they went from literally doing nothing in April to getting an awful lot done in May, leading to Star and Walter driven storylines for a couple of months. And then it feels like they're almost contractually obliged to sell tickets in other countries. And they went and did Toronto and I assume that was a WWE thing because it was in the same city as SummerSlam. And then they ran a show in France. I'm not really sure why. And shows were really struggling for interest. And they had that show in August where the tickets weren't selling and people couldn't shift the season tickets on the resale market. And you just, the crowds were bad.
Yeah, there was that picture going around
Yeah,
of like a half empty
that was
ballroom.
August, yeah.
It was a dark period. I think it's a dark period we're still in a little bit.
Yeah, but that was
I don't
after they'd
know.
had this great weekend in May, and they kind of had a couple of shows after that that kind of were still a little bit buoyant because of how good May was. And then it was, I think the feeling was that they couldn't go anywhere. They had nowhere to go from there. So September, obviously the big show at Alexandra Palace, but they also had Natural Progression, which I think that's a more important show. Because they had Gene Money get over huge. They had Scotty Davis. They had Cara Noir, who they've been focusing on pretty much ever since. And OJMO.
And Danny Duggan.
And Danny Duggan. Yeah. I feel that the smart thing to do would have been have OJMO win Natural Progression, put him in the title match at Alexandra Palace, and have Star beat him. And put the title on
Have
Star.
Star beat him.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I remember we definitely talked about options at the
We
time.
talked about it, but I feel like if you put the title on OJMO at this point, I think it's early and you run the risk of people turning on him like quickly. Whereas Star is the kind of guy that he can hold the belt for a while. Do the promos, be the man, and eventually irritate people to the point where you can have OJMO beat him, and that would make logical sense to have that like down the line.
Yeah, I think either option is better than
Eddie
Eddie
Dennis.
Dennis,
The thing is,
a
like Eddie
crippled
Dennis
Eddie Dennis.
hasn't wrestled since, can't wrestle, he's injured. But you had Star and OJMO as like the main event of the latest Camden show as like a number one contenders match. How much more emotional would that have been if it had been a title match? Like he says to OJMO, you've been working as my protege. Now you have the opportunity to show what you've learned. Here's the title match, and you can have him come up short there, but it would be so much more emotional because it'd be for the title. It'd be like, here's a title shot as opposed to
It's a
here's
bigger
a
moment. It's a much bigger moment than just
number one
number one
contenders, yeah.
contendership.
And it was actually quite a good match, and it was an emotional kind of match, but I just feel like they just fucked up by putting the title on Eddie Dennis. He doesn't need the title. It was too late anyway. And what are they going to do with him?
I'm cautiously optimistic about the whole thing, just because I want to give New Progress a fair shot.
Yeah.
I've been saying this for a while, and they seem to screw up every time. So maybe I should stop giving them a shot. But there might be something there. Obviously, Eddie Dennis can't work. Mark Andrews as a heel doesn't make sense to me because he's like a great baby face. But who knows? Maybe, I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but maybe it clicks.
Yeah, I didn't actually go to watch that match. I stayed in the pub.
Choice.
Yeah. So overall progress as a year, I
It feels like
cautiously,
a transition year for them.
yeah. There was some good stuff. There was good tag stuff at the start of the year. There was some good stuff with Star and Volta, Ilya Devlin, Volta and Ilya. There was a lot of good pairings in singles and tags, sort of in the middle of the year. I think Natural Progression was perhaps not what it should have been. But you looked at the talent that they had on that card, and the future is good. And I think they've been using some promising talent on their shows. If they can just give up on Do Not Resuscitate, and I think you're probably in a better place.
I don't hate DNR as much as everyone else. I also have seen a lot less of them than everyone else, so maybe that's why.
I feel like they were geeks a year ago, and nothing has changed, and they're still like the only heel stable, and there's just more of them.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe this Destination Everywhere thing works out really well. I'm high on those three, so we'll see.
So yeah, it's been a disappointing year, I think, for them creatively, but there have been some good moments. RevPro,
Gosh.
for me, is so weird. They've only had like these crazy quick sellouts twice at Your Call this year, and both times they completely fucked the show up. And they've had irritating no finishes and DQs and stuff that have blighted their year booking wise. And let's just kind of run through what's happening with them. So January, they kicked off with cockpit shows, and they were still trying to do a women's division at that point.
Yes.
And to see them focus on a try and focus on a women's division and just not just succeed in any way is just bizarre to look back on. But it's kind of weird that they were pushing like Irie, O'Khan, Curtis Chapman, Chris Ridgway, and ELP sort of at the start of the year.
And Star, did you
And
say Star?
Star, yeah. Star was a champion though, so like I thought that was a given. Well, cruiserweight champion at the time. Then they had the Pac Sabre match with the no finish.
Disaster,
Yeah.
disaster.
And they also ran shows in Guildford and Bristol in January. And I think RevPro this year have been trying to branch out, but they're not sure how. So that they've been doing okay local promotion work to draw people in, but they're not getting great crowds, and they're not putting on great shows in
I
these
think that,
smaller markets.
yeah, I think this is where the Southside connection is going to really help them
Yes.
because you've got the inbuilt market that you can expand into.
Yeah, but they've been trying to expand for ages, and this is just the fact they ran Guildford and Bristol. I don't even remember Bristol. But that was January. February was high stakes, so that was the Pac Osprey match, which had the time limit draw that everyone hated.
Which I was weirdly, I was on Cage Match for this show because I haven't seen the show yet. I just refused to at this point. But weirdly, 4 3/4 in the Observer,
Yeah, to
for
be honest
whatever
with
that's
you,
worth.
the match was good, except it was really obviously going to a time limit draw.
Right.
What surprised me about the rating on Cage Match is the show rating is 8.3. I thought it was a very poor show. I think it was virtually saved by the main event, and the main event would had a disappointing ending.
I think talking a bit more bigger picture about RevPro, I think they figured out because at this point they were still booking Pac in like dream matches. I
That
think
sold
they
tickets,
figured
so
out
that
that
booking
they
that Pac
can't do
Osprey
that.
match sold out the building. That's the fullest I've ever seen Your Call.
Yeah, and Pac Sabre sold out Cockpit. But you're gonna get diminishing returns at some point with it. And they've quite smartly pivoted away from that kind of pack booking before we got into the downturn. where he's now not against, he wasn't having dream matches, he was against younger guys who you know can't beat him. So you're not surprised when they lose. It's more about putting on the great performance.
I know he wrestled Brooks. He wrestled Robinson at one point in there.
Bristol 2, I think it
Is
was.
it Bristol or was it Southampton? I can't remember.
It might have been Southampton. I thought it was Bristol.
And the where it really worked was Michael Oakley.
Yeah. And then RevPro completely dropped the ball with Oku, because he didn't really do anything of interest after that.
They had been doing kind of stuff with him, so we'll get back to the timeline.
Yeah,
So we
yeah.
got they ran Southampton again in February, which was this will give you an idea of what a house showy kind of show Southampton is. It was headlined by MK McKinnon versus Kyle Fletcher, and
Right.
like no offense to either of those guys, but that doesn't feel to me like a headline. Grab it, like it's not the kind of match where you put it on the poster and go, this is our main event. It's like it's two guys who you know are gonna have a good match, but like it's not a draw.
No, it's for people that are already fans of RevPro to go watch and see the whole RevPro atmosphere
Yeah, they
and
were
not
trying to
so
sell it
much.
as RevPro being the brand sells. And if there's one thing I'm hoping they've learned, it's that it doesn't. March, they ran Northampton, just completely out of the blue. That was Pack and Brooks. They ran cockpits, a couple of cockpits in March with Sabre as the champion, that being the main focus to kind deal with that.
I liked that run, because that was when Sabre was doing the stuff with like James Mason, wasn't it?
Yeah, he had Mason, and there was another title defense in March that I can't remember who it was against.
A-Kid. I think it was A-Kid.
Yeah, those are good
That was a
matches
nice little.
for cockpit because you can see the ring. It's that small venue where that kind of match will work.
Yeah.
So I thought that was smart.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
April they went to New York, but. As part of Mania weekend, but there was an overwhelming dominance of New Japan on that show. All the big important matches were involving somebody from New Japan, whether it was Suzuki Gunn, Tanahashi and Osprey, Ishii, and I think the main event was Roppongi 3K and Aussie Open because they couldn't put somebody on last because they had to be somewhere else.
That sounds like a very WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah.
I think some of the issues Progress has with NXT UK, RevPro definitely have had with New Japan.
Yeah. I
Their
think it's
title
only a matter
situation
of
is a
time before
mess.
New Japan decide they're just going to run like Europe as New Japan. I think Royal Quest was a prime example of this.
Yeah, potentially. I think the only reason I am maybe unsure is they seem to have a stronger relationship with RevPro than they did with Ring of Honor, who are obviously the company where New Japan just gave up and decided to run US on their
I
own.
think it's largely because the Ring of Honor shows where they had access to New Japan talent, they just did a really lousy job of it.
Yeah, whereas Andy, he to a fault almost books New Japan guys quite strongly and quite well. So,
Possibly a little bit too well, because it's been almost of a, as a detriment to the actual core RevPro roster, who struggle to get over, I think, because of the shadow of New Japan. But then you always have them. I'm sure everyone that works for RevPro is happy that that relationship is there, because ultimately it does put butts in seats, and you have the chance of having those matches with those New Japan guys that you just wouldn't have anywhere else.
yeah, for sure, but I think the world title, the heavyweight title picture is a complete mess. I think what happened with ELP is an example of booking problems being caused by New Japan.
Because they wanted him heel and he was the just
They
had his
wanted
big baby face title.
him. He literally had just had his
Just a
big
week
baby face
before.
title win. Not even the week before. He won the title at Epic Encounter and was in New Japan literally the next day, I think.
But the promo would have been there. I guess he wasn't physically there, was he?
I look, it
I can't
was a
remember.
while ago, I can't
Yeah.
remember, but it was a very, very close thing. Literally, they turned him heel immediately because New Japan turned him heel, and it just doesn't really fit together.
It's a shame, really, because that was coming off the back of Epic Encounter with the Star and El Phantasmo ladder match with the payoff, and Aussie Open beat Suzuki and Sabre on that show as well, which is another big payoff. And I thought that was probably their best show of the year.
I can see that argument.
That same weekend, they ran Portsmouth with Minoru Suzuki versus Shaw Samuels on top.
I'm so happy that match happened. I don't think I've seen the match yet, but I'm
I
just
have
so
not
happy.
seen it. It's probably not on there on demand because they're just getting completely unpredictable as to what they put on there. And I can
No, I think
understand
it
that
is.
because a lot of these B shows that they're running are obviously not well received.
I think, don't quote me on this, but I think basically everything is on there. It just takes forever to actually be put on these dates, which is amazing because RevPro used to be the company with like a 24-hour turnaround.
They were in January. I think the January cockpit show, the first one, was up the next day, and then the other one just didn't turn up for weeks. It was just, oh, okay.
Something clearly. Somewhere in the middle of this year, something clearly happened because the booking goes to crap. The VOD turnaround is really, really bad. And just everything feels not right. Something's happened.
The last time that the company felt good was when they did Pac and Oku as the main event of the cockpit in June. That, for me, was the turning point because that was good and it worked, and pretty much everything they've done since has been bad. Yeah, I just. I'm looking down at what happened since, and it's just been one problem after another. They had the Ungovernable show in Manchester, which was like selling a show on LOJ, and Naito basically turned up in a t-shirt to wrestle MK McKinnon. When Naito turns up in a t-shirt, you're just getting a really shitty match.
The thing is, Naito, whenever he comes to this country, he never tries. I
Yeah.
think he's had maybe one good
It's like the
match
opposite of
coming over
Suzuki.
here. Which, fair play to him, but if you're Andy, you have to realize
Just stop booking
clearly this man doesn't care, so why am I pushing him in these big spots and building an entire show around him?
But then you've got Andy Keyes got had problems on two levels because he's also had to deal with WWE signing people who he's pushing. So he's been trying to develop talent in Europe. Brought a kid in. They had this angle with White Wolf where they were going to implode and have a match, and it had to get pushed. It actually got dragged forwards to the point where they hadn't got the cockpit out, where a kid turned before the show happened in Cheltenham, where they had the blow off match
And they had the blow off that in Cheltenham, of
in
all
Cheltenham.
places.
Yeah, I actually went to that show, and that was clearly the best match on the card. And it was the same show they had Liger's UK Farewell, which was just. I just don't understand why they would do a 7-year anniversary show in Cheltenham where they'd never run. It didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think if we talk about Progress as having peaks and troughs, then RevPro is more just a falling mountain. I don't know. I started this without really thinking where I was going.
Yeah, and obviously they've had the massive problem with Summer Sizzler, with Star and Osprey, which I talked about at length, and also Refgate.
Yeah, I don't think this is the time or the place to really go in depth on that whole Refgate incident, but it's another example of RevPro just having a very, very bad year.
But that was also a bad show with a couple of
Was a bad show.
non-finishes on it, and it was completely overshadowed by Royal Quest, and it didn't even come close to being in the same league, I don't think.
And obviously, the absolute disaster of the main event, which I still haven't seen, might never watch, just because it sounds awful.
To be honest, it's really good for like half an hour. I was stood next to Gary, and I turned around to him and I said, "This, I think, is going to be the European match of the year because it was that good." And then it just went to shit.
What a turn.
Yeah. So yeah, RevPro, I feel like over the course of the year they've had some successful shows, but they've all been small shows that not that many people have seen. And when they have had big shows, they've just failed.
Yeah, this has been a very, very bad year for RevPro.
Yeah, it's probably the worst year for RevPro since I started watching them, which would have been like, I don't know, 2013, 2014, something like that. Going forwards, however, they are keeping an eye on new markets. They've got Southside now, so they've got Sheffield for. They're actually going to run the Queen of the Ring show, which is funny because the cockpit show in January was called Queen of the Ring. So they're doing a second Queen of the Ring show the same year.
Yeah, although they're not doing, so the cockpit dates are out and they're not doing a double header on January
Yeah.
in January this time. So it does sort of balance out in a way.
But they're also running Bedford and St Neots.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see what these shows look like. Are
Yeah.
they going to be kind of like these similar to the sort of Bristol type shows that RevPro have been running? Or is it going to be more like a second cockpit style shows?
Well, they're going to draw quite well, presumably, because they've got Ben Old and like the former Southside family running things. And the one thing that they do is get crowds in. So they should be decent shows for in terms of attendance and profitability, whether they'll
Yeah,
be.
but you don't know if the fans that used to go to Southside are going to stick around for RevPro. You don't know how loyal they are to the South. Even though it's the same people, they might see wrestling under a different banner and just not bother.
No, I don't think it's going to make a massive impact on the attendance, but we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see.
It would be hilarious if it just completely tanked.
Yeah.
Speaking of completely tanked, ICW. remember ICW?
No.
this me putting this in here stems from me seeing a tweet about them running. Fear and Loathing, and realizing that Fear and Loathing is, well, it's like next weekend, but they're running a 700 capacity building and they're doing so over 2 nights. So technically, they're selling 1,400 tickets.
That's ridiculous.
So last year, they ran the Hydro and got 2,000. The year before, they had a 4-city tour leading to Fear and Loathing at the Hydro and did 4,000. Both of these shows were terrible, by the way. 2016, they had a tour of 7 cities
Wow.
before the Hydro, and they got 6,000 in 2016 for a Joe Coffey Kurt Angle main event, and the show was terrible. The year before, in 2015, they ran a tour of 10 cities and ran the SECC Hall and got 4,000 for Grado versus Drew Galloway as the main event.
Was that the record-breaking show as well?
It was until 2016 when they ran the Hydro and got 6,000.
Ah, right.
So 2016 is their biggest show, but 2015 was the one where they had Grado and Galloway. That was actually a pretty good show.
Yeah, I don't think I saw it. I remember the whole angle being really, really good.
Yeah. It's a hot angle. It was a good, it's the best Grado match I've ever seen by a country mile. To put those numbers
They're
into
just a joke.
perspective, because there was quite a big jump. So 2014, they drew 1,600. The main event for that show was Drew Galloway and Jack Jester. And
Okay.
the year before, 2013, they drew 1,200 for a main event featuring Jack Jester versus Mikey Whiplash.
Okay.
2 years
What
before
is
that, 2011, they had 250. And if you go back to 2006, they had 73 at the first Fear and Loathing show.
You've really done the research
So
here.
the numbers here are startling because the rise from like 250 in 2011 to 4 years later doing 4,000 shows how you can build a show up out of nothing and still have the guys that you've built it with on top. However, they started to bring in imports and got a little higher in 2016 with Angle on top. But then you look at the fall off afterwards and it's been startling that they built that and then it's basically gone down to a level before the peak, like before the 2015 4,000. They've gone down to half that last year, and this year it's 1,400 over 2 nights.
Yeah, I think they're a very good example of how imports can help you, but they can also hurt you quite a bit because now they're not really getting imports, and you're not really drawing anything because of it.
But they also have spent a long time booking the same Scottish guys because there are no new Scottish guys. So literally they're just repeating the same matches over and over again because they don't have a guy to step up into the spot because there just isn't any new talent. The Scottish
That's
scene is a
also.
terrible, terrible scene. And anyone that comes through doesn't have anyone good to work with, so it's just getting worse.
Yeah, I would blame ICW on some level of that because obviously they're the biggest company in that scene.
Yeah.
And so it's their responsibility to build the scene.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can say, there's not really much talent in Scotland, but that's also their fault.
Yeah. There was a lot of complacency, and they basically ignored anyone that criticized the product as not understanding the product, and then the fans started to leave in significant numbers, and they're still doing the same shit. I have suggested several times that Mark Dallas is just waiting to go on the network and he just doesn't give a fuck. This year, ICW have run one show outside of Glasgow. One, which was in Aberdeen.
Wow.
And when you compare that to 2015, when they did their tour, they ran Dundee, Newcastle, Southampton, London, Liverpool, Norwich, Sheffield, Manchester, Birmingham, and Nottingham. Now, I'm not saying those were good shows, but they ran a countrywide tour, and now they're just not running outside of Glasgow. Most of the shows they've had this year have been in the garage.
They also ran Ireland in 2016, I remember. So it's not even like 2015 was like some big special year.
Yeah,
They
no,
were
I
still
mean,
trying at one point.
but there was a tour, like I said, there was a tour of the next year as well for Fear and Loathing. They did a tour of Sheffield, Southampton, Bristol, Cardiff, Wolves, London, and Leicester to
Yeah.
lead into the Hydro show. They had a 7-city tour just to hype Fear and Loathing. And all of that is gone. Look, completely gone. There's nothing there. And I know they've had some misfortune this year with Lionheart was their champion at the start of the year, and he was still their champion in June when he died. But even so, they just haven't been doing anything.
It's unfortunate what happened with Lionheart, obviously, but I think they didn't have someone underneath that they were building up to take his spot. Because eventually he would have lost the title anyway, and they didn't have someone ready to go to do that.
Yeah, well, everyone that they've got is just guys that we've already seen. They did have one really weird main event where Shug's House Party was headlined by Kushida versus Jackie Polo, which is about as surreal a match as you'd likely to see on British soil this year, but.
Wasn't that because Jeff Jarrett got pulled? That wasn't even the original match that he booked. It was supposed to be Jackie Polo against Jeff Jarrett. I'm remembering this now. And Jeff Jarrett, because he's working backstage at WWE, just couldn't go. So they sent Kushida. So you can't even say, they booked an interesting match. They got given a match.
Yeah, it's just, oh, you look at some of the results from their year, and even like Square Go is like probably my favorite ICW show, and Red Lightning won it this year.
Wow.
It's just terrible. Like, I used to poke fun at ICW and say how terrible they were, but it's just bottomed out. Although, based on their attendance numbers in the past, they can go lower.
It's a worrying time. It very much feels like they've given up.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they are going to go on the network. Is that going to have like a positive effect?
Do you think they're still actually going to go? Do you think they're actually going to go on the network? Because it feels very incongruent to the rest of this, to the rest of what WWE are pushing.
Well, they've uploaded the stuff, so it's on there. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
it's a, they're a joke. They're a joke of a company.
So I'm going to quickly lead into the final promotion I want to talk about. I was going to do a couple of others, but Fight Club Pro. So Fight Club, I think have had a really good year. They've had a strong narrative throughout. They've been able to build with the Schadenfreude story as like the backbone. It really started to click when they kicked Walter out and Brooks started doing his anti-WWE promos in February, and they ran that as the spine of Fight Club from, well, they've been doing it for like a year and a half at this point, but like from February until September, and Project Mayhem and Death House and the whole end of that run, and leading to Dan Maloney becoming the new champion in October.
And the whole build of Dan Maloney has been really good.
Yeah.
They've had him against a big star in a big time singles match literally every show this year.
Yeah.
He was one of the guys that he had a really, really strong match with Will Ospreay over Dream Tag Team Weekend. And there's a million guys that have really great matches with Will Ospreay and then just kind of don't go anywhere. He really capitalized on, he and the promotion really capitalized on that match and gone all the way with him, and I think it's working.
Yeah, they've had a really weird year as well, because they ran Corrigan Hall in January. They've run a show in Spain in June. They brought Sendai Girls over in July, and they also ran Mexico in September. That's pretty wacky. Also, they had a Mania show as well in April.
Oh yeah, that never made tape for
Yeah,
some reason.
I think attendance wasn't very good. But yeah, they've had a weird year for like just running all over the place and like building relationships with various different promotions.
I think it's smart. I think it's smart to realize that the bubble has either burst or is about to burst in this country. So you need to start expanding if you want to stay as a major company.
Yeah, I think it's just getting
And
those relationships nailed in so that they are the first point of call for people who want to come here from Japan or Mexico, that they look at Fight Club as a way in.
yeah, because look at someone like Mal, who's coming over from DDT, and is, I'm pretty sure he's based out of Fight Club Pro, Wolverhampton.
Yeah, he's based out of Wolves. A lot of people are based out of Wolves. It's where you want to go if you want to get booked. Because you get in Fight Club first and then build from there.
I think I don't like the Fight Club Pro is a very different fight. Now is a very different company to the one that I think we all fell in love with in like 2016 during the Fixin era.
Yeah, it was Fiction where I started really enjoying their product.
I think that's going to be the case for most people. And it's a very different company. It took them a while to sort of find their feet. But this year has been very, very strong for them, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're my favorite UK promotion at the moment. The only other real contender for that is Riptide. I've only seen a couple of Riptide shows, but the quality of wrestling is lower. The storytelling is very, very good, probably better than Fight Club's, but the standard of the work is lower.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they reached similar highs, but the basement of a Fight Club Pro match is higher than the basement of a Riptide match. That's just because of the type of talent they use. Riptide is more your lower level guys, whereas Fight Club Pro is more your mid to higher level guys.
Yeah, to the point where you could accuse them of not, getting younger guys onto their shows because they haven't really broken anyone in locally since Amari.
And even he, not really, like he very much has a ceiling that he's reached. Yeah, I agree with you. It's been a while since anyone's come out of that mythical Travis Banks dojo. But there was a group of guys that came out of there. Your Omari, your Millie. I would credit a lot of Aussie Open's rise to Wolves.
Yeah, so you've got a lot of people have moved there specifically because it's a way to get better because you're training with good wrestlers and you're doing it more frequently because everyone is there in the same area in the Midlands. They can train every day.
It hasn't worked out for everyone. There's been a couple people that have gone there. It didn't really work for them. I think Jack Sacksmith has talked about the fact he went to Wolves.
Yeah.
Didn't really fit for him. So it's not 100%, but they've got a good hit rate. And
Yeah.
they've had a good year as a promotion, I think.
Yeah. But that sense of community around it has definitely driven what you see in the ring because these guys have got time to plan stuff. They've got time to get to know each other better. And that has resulted in a better in-ring and careers. Everyone that's come through in Fight Club Pro has gone on to do well elsewhere. Even Amari has gone over to OTT. Millie's gone to Japan. You look at Brooks, Drew Parker.
Yeah, of course.
It feels like everyone that goes there is successful in some way or another, and it's a boost for everyone's career to go there. I love going to it. It's a great show.
Yeah, and I disagree with what a lot of people seem to think it doesn't really translate as well to tape. As someone that's seen almost every Fight Club Pro show that's made tapes this year, I haven't seen Project Mayhem. But other than that, I've seen everything. I think it does. The crowds, you can clearly tell if the crowds are doing more than just watching the wrestling, but I don't think it takes away from the match as much as other people seem to believe.
Yeah, there is that strong drinking culture attached to it, but then I feel that that is the case for a lot of promotions, not just Fight Club.
Yeah, I think what it is there's a strong drinking culture, and because of the way that building is, because everything's so spread out, if people are just talking and chatting amongst themselves, it echoes around a bit more than it would in, say, a cockpit or a your call.
You literally can't have a chat in cockpit the wrestlers can hear you.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's wrap it up, man. We've got things to do. So, do you need to plug anything?
You can follow me on Twitter at AkilK94. That's AkilK94. I don't do anything else anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Arnold Furious. You should be listening to this on the website, which is arnoldfurious.com. I am a massive egomaniac. And
This
what's.
podcast is literally named after you.
Yeah. Bask in my glory.